But I'm also seeing and hearing a lot of people saying that this kind of event, this kind of thing is passé. It shouldn't happen anymore. This is 2020. What are people doing going on orientation camps which involve teamwork in some degree? Not of, well, theoretically, there's no physical danger, but theoretically involving teamwork and a degree of physical exertion and so on. Claire Ma is an educational psychologist in private practice. Claire, good afternoon.
Hi, John. How's it going?
All right. Is there a case to be made for this kind of activity, as long as, and it's an important caveat, things are done safely and proper supervision is exercised always?
Absolutely. I think your words there of the safety and the proper supervision are actually mandatory in terms of these types of activities. You know, orientation camps have serve a great sort of positive purpose for our learners, and a variety of which have been mentioned in terms of the team building that allows our learners, especially the learners who are in grade 8 starting at a new school, give them an opportunity to meet each other, to see each other in a relaxed place, get to know their teachers. And I think we need to draw a distinction between orientation and what I think can sometimes happen in schools without supervision of some sort of initiation processes.
I mean, we have no idea whether, I mean, we've been told by the school that there were teachers present and teachers were ultimately in charge. But essentially, the camp was run by the grade 12s, who until 6-7 weeks ago were grade 11s. And we have no idea whether there was an abuse of that level of authority by the now matrix.
Should they
be involved? Should they be in charge? Because if you have 17-year-old boys, 18-year-old boys in charge of 13, 14-year-old boys, don't you increase the risk that something improper might happen, that the supervision might not be of the quality that these kinds of camps need?
Sure. And I think, look, admittedly, I don't know enough. And as you said, we're hoping that the best outcome will come of this case. And I admittedly don't know enough about the ongoings there and who was in charge, who wasn't. But I think on a broad kind of spectrum, looking broadly at orientation, you know, I think that there's something positive in our grade 12s, as you say, would sort of be in grade 11s up until now. But there's something positive about them being able to engage as leaders. So not as dictators, yeah, not as rulers, but as leaders of their school with the younger grades in a way of sort of role modeling that positive behavior of creating those relationships with the younger learners, that they see it as a space, that they're not, you know, the little ones and they've got these big boys in charge of them, but that there's a sense of unity in the school. I do think, and I mean, sort of all over the news since in the last decade plus, I mean, it's got been going on forever, there's news of these stories going wrong. And so I thought it's not an uncommon situation to happen where that adult supervision can be lacking. And I think that that's probably where problems do come into, where you have maybe more bullying or more of the sort of roughhousing that might go on broadly. So I think, again, going back to the fact that adult supervision is important, absolutely.
And having these activities off school premises and involving some form of physical activity, I mean, you know, right, the challenge is collect some materials, there's some rope, there's some whatever, make makeshift rafts, and the first team to get from point A upriver to point B downriver is the winner and gets to sit around tonight while everybody else makes the fire and cooks the food. I mean, that's, when done properly, an acceptable and perhaps even admirable way of doing something like this?
I think that those activities have merit when they're done properly. And I think that there can be lots of other ways, though, as well, that those sorts of, that the goal of those activities is reached. As you say, to have these activities or these orientations off school, some schools prefer that. Others do choose to do their orientation more on-site or in-house. And so I think that they can be done properly and they can create sort of that goal of team building. But again, within the realm of safety, and I think when it is done off-site, there does become obviously a responsibility for that safety to be taken even more into account.
So now I'm cynical of team building events generally. It's something that I don't know to what extent it's still part of corporate culture in South Africa, but there was a time where you had to go away with people from your own division within the company and people from other divisions in the company, and you'd go to the Breede River and you'd do activities together. And I was never impressed by that. I thought whatever whatever learnings happened would be a very short duration and wouldn't change things much in the company. So I'm kind of instinctively opposed to this at school level as well. So I think
you're right. I mean, it's happening across the board. And I think, as you say, it's in schools, it's in universities, it's in corporate or in any sort of work environment, where I think the idea is positive. The idea of trying to unite the team, say, in a corporate setting, trying to sort of draw people together to get to know each other a bit better. The idea is good. But I think sometimes it certainly pushes a lot of people out of their comfort zones. And I think that that's probably where problems come in. You know, if there were situations where learners could, and I think back to my school days of having to climb on very high sort of walkways to achieve certain things. I mean, that's very uncomfortable for a lot of kids, and that's not necessarily life-threatening. But I think there's a level of discomfort that perhaps isn't necessary in some of the benign orientation setups.
Yeah, and I wonder who designs these camps in the sense of decides on the activities and how and when they're going to be carried out. Perhaps they're designed by people for whom sort of macho values are predominant when it comes to boys only schools.
Sure,
and so the entire camp is based around how butch and how, you know, manly in that very old-fashioned sense of manly you can be, and maybe that's passé.
I absolutely agree with you. And one of the things sort of in thinking about this chat together today is that they don't have to be those be a man kind of tests, you know, where boys are forced to do things that are considered to be manly. And I think, you know, in the same way, girls or within co-ed education systems or even in single-sex education systems, even there's a push to be brave, to be out of your comfort zone, to do things that maybe is dirty and you don't want to do. And I think that really isn't necessary. I do believe that in any kind of orientation, corporate, school, at school, away from site, I don't think that it's necessary to be enforcing those sorts of skills, I guess. But to answer your previous point, I think that the organization, it really varies. You know, some schools have got a big input and choice of where they send their kids for camp, and they sort of will offer a list of activities and they'll choose what's best suited for their learners. Whereas I think there are others that are run perhaps more on a basis of their kind of structure. I don't know for this particular lodge what the structure was, but I think it's helpful when you can have that input from what you know you need from your school or your corporate setting.
Claire Maher, thanks for chatting to us this afternoon.